coming to you live from the distant suns of the Kalmagulon galaxy. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me, as always, is still more election news. What is this hell? And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 2, A Non-Agrarian Nonagenarian.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And Chip Beauvais has abandoned us to a world of darkness and fear eternal.
I mean, he's still here in his room with all of the honey roasted peanuts.
He took them.
They deliver them right there now.
They don't even bring them to the main part of the studio.
Nope, they come in the back.
We used to have bowls of them, and Chip was just like, these are my bowls now. And he poured all of the honey roasted peanuts into a huge trash bag, and then he broke the bowls.
Yeah.
He just shattered them on the ground.
He was having a rough day.
Yeah, you know, as I understand it, something happened that he didn't like.
But it is just the two of us on mic today.
Yes, no Chip Beauvais today.
He's just munching on honey roasted peanuts, presumably.
But he's not
behind locked doors.
He's doing good deeds too.
Well, probably, but I mean, we can't tell.
That's what Chip does with his time. He's probably helping orphans across the street, adopting old ladies,
right?
Stuff of that nature.
Patting a burning dog. They tell you not to do that, but you can put the fire out if you're good enough at it.
And the key is, as I understand it, is to move your hand quick enough.
Right.
That the fire can't catch it.
It's a pat, not a pet.
Because, yeah, exactly. Don't pet that dog.
No.
But if you pat correctly, the flames will not burn your hand.
Right.
Because they can't catch it. You got to be quick. Because you see, the fire is in a specific spot. It's not everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're fast, you can be in one spot and the fire is in a different spot. And then you bring your hand out and the fire and your hand were never in the same spot. You're fine. It's how it works. It's science.
Which brings up a new game we're working on called Sometimes Pat a Burning Dog. Okay. It's a working title.
It's the title we're using for the moment while we make it.
It's about tanks.
Yeah. Tanks like that you would store fluids in,
mm-hmm.
that are high up in the air on stilts, and they use gravity to make the liquids in them come out and be in other places.
Yep.
It's the kind of tank we're talking about. Not the kind of tank
that fish live in.
That fish live in. Or the kind of tank that so terrified World War I soldiers as it clattered across the fields of France.
Right.
In 1914. Back when that was the case. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Different kind of tank that we're referring to here. Talk about fish tanks.
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 You're welcome.
You are welcome. It's a service we provide. We're glad that you are here to accept it, to receive our bounty.
What the hell?
But we are glad you're here. We're glad you're reading the podcast.
God, you're so dumb. So very dumb.
That you chose to click on our link, come here, and spend some time with us on our board game podcast. It's about board games. It's the Mildly Alarming Podcast, and we are board game designers. So what is our topic for tonight, Wilbur?
I think we were talking about a mechanic. Is that what we're doing this time?
We
right
are
now
talking about a mechanic
segment?
Now.
Is it negotiation?
Oh.
Or is it a different one?
I thought it was Carl.
Carl.
The guy who
the
was
Carl mechanic.
Who was gonna fix my car when it broke.
Mm-hmm.
And then he didn't.
He's not actually a mechanic, Tom.
Who, what is he?
He's just the guy that lives across the street from your house.
So you, yeah, but
I think he's a CPA.
But
I think he's had his CPA license revoked, actually.
But I parked my
car. He's a criminal, Tom.
I parked my car in his driveway,
uh-huh.
and then I went to, I had my wife drive me to work.
Right.
And then he didn't do anything with it.
And you're surprised by that?
Well, yeah, he's a mechanic.
As previously established. No, I'm pretty sure he's not.
But then why did I park my car in his driveway?
Because you're dumb.
Oh.
It's a bad plan.
It didn't work. It didn't work at all.
Yeah.
He didn't put gas in it.
No. Which was all that it needed.
That was the problem. Yeah, the gas thing was at E, not on the other side.
G.
G for gas. Gosh, that's a lot of gas in that tank. Gee golly willikers, your tank sure is full, partner. I lost track of that one at the end.
At the beginning, I think.
I think, really. By beginning, do you mean when you said to me, hey, let's do a podcast?
Yeah.
Was it your idea or mine?
You know, let's not place blame. Let's just move on our day.
Fair enough. Negotiation games, that's what we're talking about today. Games in which a major mechanic or a major part of the game is looking your friend Gary, who you're playing the game with, in the eye and being like, you should do this thing that I want you to do instead of this other thing that Calvonimus wants you to do.
Right.
Because it will be better for you if you do the thing I want you to do. And above all else, don't do what Devin wants you to do because he's a criminal.
Never do what Devin wants you to do.
He's a thought criminal.
It's a bad move.
And he's going to thought jail for his bad thoughts.
Yep.
We're on to you, Devin. So there's a lot of games like this. Most games have an element of negotiation in that in any game you can say to the other guy, don't do that move. You should do a different move than you're planning to do. But some games push it more than others. Like Risk, for example, I would point out is a game that has negotiation, but you really don't have to have it. The game works even without, even if you all sit there in stony silence the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an element of negotiation. I can't count the number of games of Risk I've played where somebody's like, don't attack me, you're better off attacking Gary. You should attack Gary in South America for X, Y, and Z reasons. And then I do that and I lose because they were manipulating me. I was being manipulated and it was not the best plan. But that's an element of negotiation. It's tricking people into doing things you want them to do because it's better for you, not for them. And a lot of games have this. Catan has it in the trading of different cards. You can trade resources among one another, anything with resource trading. There's an element of negotiation there, especially if the game doesn't assign any explicit values to it. If they just let you be like, you can trade for whatever. You can just trade. You can trade. It's a thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing saying, I can't give you 13 wool for one brick. I shouldn't, because that's too much wool for that brick. But
that's so much wool, you could probably make a brick or two out of
it.
If
you compress it.
Just real dense wool.
Why don't we make bricks out of wool?
The sheep hate it.
The sheep?
Mm-hmm.
Don't like it?
Nope.
Oh. So what are the advantages of negotiation? Like, what is the advantage of having a negotiated element of your game?
Well, I would say that Risk probably, as a great example, requires negotiation. Because if someone were to say, let's play Risk, I would say no. And they would say, but come on, we really want to. And I would say, no, what is wrong with you? And they would say, maybe, what if we paid you a large sum of money? And I would say no. And the negotiations would continue until mm-hmm. the time was over for game playing and we couldn't play Risk. And I would have won that negotiation by attrition.
What if I had your wife
mm-hmm.
and I told you, Johannes, I am going to, if you do not play Risk with me,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give your wife a dog
uh-huh.
and then you're going to have that dog.
Sure. I can just kill the dog. That's a thing I can do. I will say that on the internet for all to hear.
What if I told you it was an immortal dog that cannot be killed?
That presents a problem.
And so now you just have that dog unless you play Game of Risk with me.
Mm-hmm. I would play Risk with you then.
If I were going to give your wife an immortal dog.
Yep.
That you wouldn't be able to dispose
of. For certain values of play, yes, I would.
Which is to say you would be at the table, but you would never place any new armies, nor would you take any actions on your turn.
Unless I knew specifically that they would somehow upset you. Yeah.
Well, that's easy.
Yeah, I know. You have red hair.
Ah, what?
Just fiery redheads.
Oh.
I was just insulting you. You have red hair.
You have red hair. I once knew a guy in college who was like, do you mind if I touch your red hair? It's just so weird.
Yeah, I would not hang out with that guy.
Yeah, but he touched my hair before I could stop him. He's just got his hands pawing. And I'm like, I guess that happened to me now in my life. I wonder what ever happened to that guy.
You lost that negotiation with him.
I did. Well,
over
the thing
hair
is,
touching.
The thing is, it wasn't really a negotiation. Because,
right.
like, it started that way. Like, we could be like, maybe if you give me $500, I'll let you pet me on the head. But then it was just like, can I touch your red hair? It's so weird. And then the hand is in my red hair. And that's the end of things.
How much would you make someone pay you?
To let them touch my hair?
With or without saran wrap?
I'm not going to lie. Like, if somebody's like, hey, if I give you $20 can I touch your hair for just a moment? Was that fine? Like, I it doesn't bother me that much.
It's like a little bird.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to lie, it's weird and uncomfortable, but,
sure, yeah,
you know, that's fine. It's not that big a deal.
What if they wanted to touch your chest hair?
That's a little weirder because I got to take my shirt off.
Sure.
For that.
Well, not necessarily.
I don't usually wear button-downs without an undershirt on them. So no matter what, I'm lifting a shirt up. And I'm that.
Or just letting them reach all up in there or down your collar, I guess.
Yeah, I don't want any of that. That's getting a little weird.
All right, what's the over-under on armpit hair? No reason. Just answer the question. So negotiation.
I feel like armpit hair is going to be a little higher yet on the scale than chest hair because there's a chance it might tickle.
Mm-hmm. Fair point. You don't have any nerves in your chest, so nothing can tickle you there.
Right, right. Dude, not since the accident.
Right.
This is the best podcast on the entire
internet. It's pretty great. So what games have we played that have negotiation as like a core mechanic? Is that a thing that happens?
I mean, a lot. So usually it's not like, and then you have to negotiate with each other.
Right.
In the negotiation phase where the negotiation happens. But often games will be like, this game is better if you don't just sit in stony silence and make mechanically calculated moves.
Sure.
Like the Game of Thrones war game. It's better if you talk to each other.
Right.
And try to get people to do stuff and try to forge alliances and whatnot. Risk is more in, like, a lot of the game that makes it fun to play is in bouncing off the other players and being like, I don't think I can get Gary to fight on my side. I don't think I can manipulate him into attacking Europe instead of me. So I'd better attack him to start with.
Sure.
But I can totally talk Devin into doing it. So a lot of games, it's informal, I think. I don't know of a lot of games that have it as an explicit part, and it would be hard to make it explicit that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could include a negotiate, you know, the most explicit it usually gets is something like, and at this point you can, the next round doesn't start until everybody agrees, and then you've got a point where it's official that negotiations can begin and end, and a point where you have to just resolve stuff. Like Diplomacy, the famous friendship ruining game, does this where there's a lengthy, potentially hours long round of planning and negotiation and deciding what you're going to do.
Sounds like a blast.
But then, so let me back up a step. So in Diplomacy, you've got a map of World War I era Europe and into the Middle East. You've got all the way to the Ottoman Empire and Eastern Russia, Western Russia, I guess. Anyway, each player is one power from the First World War. And you negotiate with one of them. You say, hey, if you support me in an attack in Belgium, you know, that would be good. You should do that. And then you make all of those decisions verbally. And then you write down on a piece of paper what your actual orders are. And then you give that piece of paper to whoever is tabulating them for the round. It can be a moderator. You can just pick a person to look at them each round because they're written down. Mm-hmm. They are what they are.
Right.
And then you resolve them and find out who lied to you and who is betraying you and stabbing you in the back.
Neat.
Yeah. So a lot of games that do negotiations have that kind of thing where you can negotiate for a while, but there's some hard limit that is, and now you've locked in what is happening, and it's happening, and you don't get to change it now. It's just going to happen. Or, you know, things like in Catan, once you've handed the cards back and forth, that's the trade. The trade has been made.
Right. So there's... I guess negotiation kind of encompasses a lot of things, because you could say negotiation like what you just talked about in Diplomacy, or say in Eclipse, you border, you know, two other players, and I say to Alphonse on my right, hey, I'm going to let you pass freely through my space as long as you don't attack me, and just don't attack me. Mm-hmm. And we'll be good. We're not allies necessarily, but we're going to negotiate sort of a truce. I'll let you... Well, I guess I forget the rules in Eclipse. Will, I think you have to...
Eclipse, you would have to leave
the
space open. But you... Yeah.
Go ahead.
You could fudge it in some ways by leaving the space open, by agreeing to retreat immediately with a batshirt, a battle star, or stuff
so,
like that.
So that goes to another point that I was going to make in a minute about negotiation often being something that works better with house rules than with the written rules of a game, but we'll get there in a minute. So there's sort of wartime negotiations, like diplomatic negotiations, but then there's also just basically haggling.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there's, well, like, so even before that, I guess there's the trading in Catan, which is closer to haggling because you're just trading goods,
right?
And sometimes it's like, yeah, you know, I have these things, and I don't really need them, and I may be willing to negotiate a trade where I give you 13 wool for 2 bricks because I have a lot of extra wool that I don't need, and I really need some bricks, and I have no way of making them.
I have so many nude sheep.
So there's that, and then there's just a really kind of haggly, that sounds like a bad thing as I say it out loud, but I don't mean it that way, mm-hmm. but in Bonanza, like, hey, I need blue beans, and you have those, and I need to get rid of these red beans, and I guess you need those. Like, I'll give you one red bean for your 5 blue beans, mm-hmm. and there's just that kind of back and forth. It's not nearly as meaningful. I guess it is as meaningful to the game, but it just doesn't feel like it because the game is a lot lighter mm-hmm. than the other two. So negotiation just as a thing, as like basically somewhat outside what can be governed by the written rules of the game, often just like you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of stuff. Right. And so that then leads into how this often works better than intended, maybe, or better than a game does without it. In a game where you add to negotiation, you house rule in negotiation where it was not written into the rules. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get all of these wrong. If you can think of any, like I don't think that's technically allowed in Monopoly, right? Mm-hmm. You basically just have to pay the cost of the, you know, well, I mean, it on your space.
When you mean negotiation, like in terms whatever. Of the amount of rent you go pay ahead. When you sure, land yeah. at somebody's house. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think officially you can reduce the rent that is paid. I think you can buy and sell properties for whatever you want among players.
Is that the case? Yeah. It's been so long.
It has been a long time since I've played Monopoly either. Apparently, if you play Monopoly strictly by the book, mm-hmm. it actually doesn't take that long.
Yeah.
And it's almost fun.
Huh.
But it's house rules that make it a pain in the butt.
Really?
Apparently, yeah. The big house rule that makes it stupid is that the free park, if you land on free parking, you get all the money in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Because
that one is dumb.
Because it keeps players alive long after they should have been mathematically eliminated.
Sure. But isn't there some rule we talked about before, I think, where like if a property is landed on and then not bought, it immediately goes up for auction
yes.
or something
yes.
like that?
That's that's also a very commonly skipped rule in Monopoly.
Yeah. I feel like that could either make things take way longer or make things go faster, depending on how
well it makes
the
them go
play.
Go longer in an immediate sense in that you're going to start having these auctions that take time to resolve.
Yeah.
But it speeds up the game in that you tend to have properties owned. And
sure.
And so people are forced to pay rent on them.
Yeah.
Apparently in Monopoly, I don't know if we want to go off on this tangent.
Go for it.
Apparently in Monopoly, I've never tried this, but there's a killer strategy where once you start getting a lot of properties, mm-hmm. instead of building hotels on them, you build like three or four houses. Mm-hmm. on each one and don't upgrade them to hotels because that creates a housing shortage
mm-hmm.
because
only place houses if they are available.
Exactly. And so then other players can't upgrade their properties. And now you have, you basically become a slumlord
mm-hmm.
and you have this huge sprawling slum of cruddy, of lousy semi-improved properties that people are forced to land on and pay you some, not as much as they would if it was a hotel, but still a fair bit of money.
Yeah.
And then you just grind them down because it's a game about capitalism.
Fun. No, it's Monopoly. It's not fun still.
It's not fun. Monopoly is a game where there's a lot of negotiation and getting you to sit down to the table in the first place.
But going back to negotiating outside of the rules of the game, there's definitely a game we have played, and I cannot for the life of me think of what it is. Like, it's not even that I have an idea of the game and I can't think of the name. I just don't know what it is. But uh-huh. there is something we have played where we basically throw out rules about table talk
mm-hmm.
and just allow people to outright negotiate and trade things with one another. And it had made the game, I think we started doing it accidentally or something. Mm-hmm. It might not even be our current game group. It might have been someone else I played games with.
Sure.
But it's not a useful story because I don't remember what it was or how it worked.
Yeah, I would offer some incisive commentary here, except that I don't know what it is, so I can't
yeah.
do that.
Cool.
Good podcast.
We're great
on
the
internet that we talked about.
Well, have we played with negotiation in any of our design?
Nothing that's gone like to fruition. There have been a few games that have poked in that direction,
mm-hmm.
But nothing we've ever really come up with. And part of that is that it's hard to create a negotiation. In order for it to work, mm-hmm. you've got to have something to haggle over.
Right.
Right? And it's tricky to create a structure of interlocking pieces that is both interesting to haggle over
uh-huh.
and interesting mechanically in and of itself.
Uh-huh.
You know, you need enough stuff going on that there's stuff worth trading without it also being immediately obvious that, no, I can't possibly make that trade with you because I have clear information that if I make that trade with you, I'm going to lose in a turn.
Right.
There needs to be enough uncertainty that you can potentially say, hey, come on. Come on, you know you want to. It's going to be great for both of us. It's fine. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Well, we see it here and there in Plays of Big Man with mm-hmm. people who really seem to grasp the concept.
Of Bugmarn?
Yeah, where they're negotiating like, hey, maybe let me through here. Because as the game currently goes, there's no reason to ever not attack a person unless mm-hmm. you absolutely can't win. Like, basically, hurting another player is always a good idea for your victory
right.
in Big Man. But you see things where it's like, no, if you let me pass, I'll keep this guy who's ahead of both of us from getting past. You kind of see some of that stuff happening. It's not really explicitly mm-hmm. written into the rules, but it happens. I think what I was trying and failing to get at with negotiation outside the rules is that in order to design that in the first place, you have to really trust your players to not intentionally use that to break the game
mm-hmm.
because negotiation that is too strictly controlled by the rules of the game isn't really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the flip side of that is that a negotiation that allows a lot of leeway trusts the player to not just say, hey, I will let you take my turn next turn.
Mm-hmm.
If you let me do that, which is game-breaking. You right. just can't do
so
that.
You do need to place some limits on what can be traded and exchanged and whatnot. Although some of those are just kind of implicit, I guess, in how games work.
Yeah.
Like, it would literally never occur to me to be like, hey, let me control your next turn in exchange for this.
Yeah.
But you're right. You do need to trust your players. Conversely, you need to trust that your players will use their powers for good.
Mm-hmm.
To make, like, for example, there's a guy I played games with a couple of times back in the day who I will not play games with anymore because his idea of negotiation,
mm-hmm.
negotiation was to wait until it was my turn
uh-huh.
and then just start talking at me and just trying to interrupt my ability to think through what I want to do.
That's deeply annoying.
Yeah. And like, I'm like that. So there's a blurry line between negotiation and, for lack of a better term, psychological warfare.
Sure.
Negotiation is fun and interesting and intriguing game mechanic. Psychological warfare is fine if you're fighting a war with somebody
mm-hmm.
and you have to beat them to save your civilization.
Yeah.
But if we're playing a board game to have a nice evening as friends, don't do that.
Right.
And so I feel like that line is a lot blurrier than I make it out to be necessarily.
Yeah.
And if you're that guy, like I remember I got up, I actually stopped playing in the middle of the game. I was like, this is no longer fun. I don't want to play games with you anymore.
Yeah.
So, congratulations, you've ruined our fun. Good work.
That sounds great. That guy sounds like a lot of fun to play games with.
Exactly.
Games.
But you need to trust that your game has been set up to attract an audience that will get the kind of negotiation you're giving them. Like, some people love that. Some people live for pitting their weird neuroses against one another and that level of manipulation of another person's soul. I don't find it that much fun myself, but some people do. Some people go to diplomacy tournaments.
Yeah, doesn't sound good.
They play it for 12 hours and they try to break one another so that the other person makes a mistake because they can't function anymore.
That sounds just super cool.
The world is a weird place. There's just a lot of weird stuff that goes on that you don't even think about, like diplomacy tournaments. Like, that's happening now.
That is weird and messed up. I do feel like if I were... tournament play is not something I really have personal experience with,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like a lot of the, like, don't be a dick style rules that are sort of assumed in gameplay and game design
mm-hmm.
just go right out the window because you're playing against people you don't know necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to ruin your evening all
yes,
the time.
Do.
But
you explicitly, you're kicking me right now in the shin over and over and over again.
It's your penance for
There's
being
another
the
one.
Person that you are.
There's another kick
but
to the shin.
I don't want to ruin Devin's night when we play board games together. I just want to play some games like you were saying. But if I'm playing in a tournament to win against strangers, screw that guy. I'm going to play all the head games with him that I want because it's going to help me win.
Mm-hmm.
And you suddenly have a very different world to play in. And I think that is where saying, give me your turn, like that kind of outside the mm-hmm. common sense, unwritten rules of the game stuff might begin to happen, which may well be why a lot of games have separate rules for tournament play.
Mm-hmm. And tournament organizers develop
yeah.
sets of rules around them. Like, and this is how we're interpreting this because, oh my God, we can't possibly interpret it the other way. Yeah.
No knives allowed.
No knifing. No knifing.
Do not knife people.
Don't knife them. Jerome.
God, Jerome. Always with the kniving.
He's always kniving everyone. He's got a knife up his sleeve.
Sometimes 2 to 3 knives. But
one in his pocket. Another one on a leather thong around his neck, dangling down his back. Small of his back is where it winds up. He's cut the leather too long, so it's hard to reach. He's got to go up the back of his shirt to get at it.
It's not a great place for a knife.
This is bad. It's hard for him to draw it. You screwed up, Jerome. You made a mistake.
Jerome, you're a disappointment to all of us.
Jerome, see me in the principal's office.
You have anything else to say about negotiation?
No.
Well, we'll be back then with a different topic that will hopefully be better than this one was.
This topic was amazing!
After this word from our sponsors, you could tell us some better topics to try than this one was. On Twitter at mildlyalarming.
On email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
On the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or for just a starting offer of $15, you can tell us it in person at our houses.
You could tell us it in both of those places.
We'll do it for 10.
You don't need to talk yourself down. You're terrible
five.
At this.
We could do $5.
$500. $3. Nope, nope. Okay, we're done. Bye.
Do you ever work with people who just make you so angry? You feel disrespected, unheard, unloved, even by yourself? Hi, I'm Dr. Simon Touche, and I've spent 30 years developing my methods for handling difficult people. Whether you meet them at home, at school, or anywhere else, even in the laboratory. By learning my methods over only 6 short weeks, you'll become a master at serenely and effectively navigating conflicts with difficult people. Techniques include active listening, alertness for signs of trouble, power stances, strikes to the temple, strikes to the neck, biting, smoke bombs for quick escapes, constructing a death ray, taunting the super friends via Jumbotron, and showing them all. With my proven techniques, a little courage, and a flock of biomechanical vulture droids with laser eyes on your side, you'll be confident that while they laughed at you before, you'll be the one laughing now. So come to my sign-up session in the caldera of a possibly dormant volcano today and start on your road to peace, serenity, and complete victory over your foes.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm drinking brandy out of a footed brandy glass, and I feel like I should be wearing a velvet smoking jacket and sitting in a dark mahogany library in a leather chair. I have the brandy and I have the leather chair, but I'm missing the other two things.
He's wearing just a fishnet a tank
onesie.
Top. Yeah. A fishnet onesie, and we are sitting in a booth at a filthy truck stop just outside of Peoria, Illinois.
It's a Waffle House in a truck stop.
Yep. And there's a huge guy named Bubba who's looking at all of our equipment, and he looks thirsty.
Just for liquid.
Yeah,
he seems parched.
They haven't brought him his water yet that he ordered with his fritters, and he's getting a little salty about it, but, you know, the waitress, Irma, she's a tough old bird, so she's going to be okay. She's got a neck tattoo. Of herself.
As a dog.
With a neck tattoo.
Of herself.
As a dog.
Just with a regular, like a dog collar. You can only go so far before you can't make out what is it on a neck tattoo.
It's too small.
The
tattoo artists aren't miracle workers here.
Well, I mean, some of them maybe. I don't want to offend our large listener base of tattoo artists.
Some of them might literally be able to perform miracles. They are on the road to Catholic sainthood.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet a miracle performing tattoo artist.
And almost yet not quite saint.
Yeah, he's just on the way. He's just like, I think sainthood would be pretty neat. I'm going to try for it.
Yeah.
We just perform a quick miracle.
Plus tattoos.
That's how that works, right?
So this segment, we are going to do...
not even going to touch that one, huh?
Just, I'm done. I'm done with that.
Fair enough.
Board game, Smash-O-Rama. That's the theme music.
Don't we have like a monster truck sound that happens?
No.
We don't?
Nope.
I thought we did.
I didn't. I have yet to need to make music for this because you always do some weird thing with your mouth. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Fair enough.
One day, maybe, this will never happen. It's too much work. But, you know, in imagination land, maybe I'll go back and find all of your sung themes to this segment and mash them together into one that we could put in. It would be real bad and everyone would die.
Nobody would be happy about that. Least of all the readers.
So what board games are we smashing together?
Today we're smashing together we're smashing together some more modern board games, some more designer board games, some board games we've talked about on the air many times. First up is Captain Sonar, the submarine battle that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Quick summary. It is two teams of up to four players each controlling a submarine cooperatively within their own team. Captain, first mate, engineer, and radio operator. Radio operator is just listening to other players drive their sub around, trying to identify where they are. The others collaborate to move and keep their sub running and fire weapons and use systems. And last sub standing wins. It's awesome. Go listen to our episode about it, entitled Extreme Moisture Boat.
Game number two is Time and Space, which is a real-time space trading game where you have to fly your little ship from planet to planet and sell goods and fill orders and
produce goods. Yep.
In real time, you have two little kitchen egg timer, sand timer things, and you have to run a timer for every action. So a timer, I think they're 30-second timers. It takes a 30-second timer to get from a planet to a wormhole and then a wormhole to another planet. It takes a timer to produce a good. It takes a timer to move that good that you've produced from its production thing into the holding area. The cargo hold. It takes a timer to unload those goods on a planet where you're selling them, and you have to sell goods, and it gets a little more complex than that, but I don't think it needs to be dug into for this.
That gives the idea.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're gonna crash those two. The idea of board game Smash Rum is that we take two games and we identify what kind of makes them them. What is the key element that if you lose it, you're no longer talking about that game? And then we take those elements and we boosh them together into one big monster game and see if that game is even remotely interesting.
Boosh.
Boosh. It's a technical term among game designers. Ask the people at your next game design meeting. So I think the obvious thing that we have to dump from these games is the real-time element, because that is not... There's no way to combine that between the two games, and so it's got to be turn-based.
Yeah, you can't take a real-time game and a real-time game and put those together. You would end up with, like... science doesn't know.
Yeah, science can't know. It's like multiplying a negative number by the square root of my dog.
And he doesn't even have a dog.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. You can't do it.
It can't be done.
Can't be done. Isaac Newton couldn't have done it.
He had like one of those curly hair wigs, maybe.
And then
in all the pictures.
He had those figs.
He was allergic to apples.
That he knew about. The figs. The Fig Newtons.
Right, yeah.
It's funny because...
It's not funny. You're not funny.
It's kind of funny. Okay, so I think the key element from Captain Sonar to take, obviously we got to keep the, we have to keep the real time in one way or another, right? I think the key element from Captain Sonar to take away is the team.
Yeah,
based thing, teams and roles. So you've got up to four players combining different distinct roles to accomplish one overall goal.
Yeah,
I think that team element is key for Captain Sonar.
Okay, and I think probably the timers
are the thing.
They're the rawest mechanical thing that stands out for Time and Space, though I also find intriguing the trading aspect where it's not outright competitive, because in order to reach your own goal, you necessarily have to benefit the other players as well, because you have to sell to them in order to win.
Yeah. The other component of Time and, or not Time and Space, Captain Sonar, that might be worth considering, I don't know if we have to keep it, is the you use a dry erase marker and a sheet that you can draw on
For your course, or just in general?
To do everything.
Okay.
In Captain Sonar.
Yeah.
To do everything, to do your sub, to do your course, to do your engineering stuff, whatever you're doing.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of neat. That's different.
Okay.
I don't know if there's a way to combine it to make that work, but that might be something we want to think about keeping in there.
Okay. I'm fine with keeping it or not, depending on what we come up with. I guess that doesn't feel like a mechanic as much as a component design choice, because we've played several games, and I think there might even be this in Time and Space, or I might be thinking of Space Alert, where there's they just give you a pad of paper that you can write on with a pencil to keep track of some stuff. Yeah, that's Space Alert. So it's definitely nicer with the dry erase and the reusable, but a, you know, keeping track of things and maybe having a pad of custom printed stuff is not new in and of itself.
Sure.
Do you have a thought, or should I launch into something? Because I have a thought.
You go ahead with your thought first.
Okay. So my thinking is, I think we're pretty much ending up with a game that is just a more in-depth Time and Space, mm-hmm. in my mind, where you're doing a similar thing. You're moving from planet to planet, trying to sell your goods and produce your goods, but you could take the roles and say you've got, you may even keep the captain of the ship who's like, okay, I'm going to set the course. I'm going to say, try to communicate. The captain might be more of a diplomat. You're talking to the other players. So you're kind of working on, what do you need? What should we produce? And then you may have a pilot slash engineer type of person who's sort of in charge of actually making sure the ship continues functioning, maybe getting the upgrades that you see in the later version of Time and Space that allow you to produce more. Mm-hmm. And then you'd probably have a person in charge of production.
I guess you could
make it four. You could take the diplomat and the captain and make them separate things.
That's exactly what I was thinking, is put somebody on the ship. I mean, and there's multiple ways you could break it down, but have somebody on the ship flying around the galaxy doing deliveries and pickups, and somebody on the planet managing
producing, selling,
managing your infrastructure there.
Yeah.
And you could do kind of a cool thing with it too. Because Captain Sonar, in order to keep the two teams separate, they've got a giant screen that goes down the middle of the table.
Uh-huh.
What if you did that between the player who's driving the boat, the spaceboat,
and the player who is on the ship, or the players?
Exactly, the player who's running the planet.
That'd be interesting.
One player on the ship, and so if you bring your spaceship back to the planet, you can take down the screen because you're back at the planet and you can see. But once you start flying, you have to put the screen up, and now you don't know what your teammate is doing, and maybe that means you're not as coordinated as you think you are.
So I to go on a slight tangent, I had a thought earlier today, I think. I was thinking about Captain Sonar and a problem with the separating just with a screen is that, like, I'm tall enough that I can see over the screen. I can see about half of the other team's thing over the screen from the far end of the table.
Mm-hmm. Even if you're just not trying.
Yeah, I didn't have to crane my... I wasn't trying to look, and most of the time I was the engineer, so it wasn't helpful information for me anyway, but I could see it. What if you played that game or our mashup that we're making here? Literally in different rooms with two-way radios. Obviously not something you could package in your game, but if you really want to nerd out your submarine game, what the things that the captain has to say that you need to hear, they get set into the radio. Move north. Move
that's
kind of
cool. Yeah.
And the rest of the stuff gets rid of it changes the game slightly because you don't have to whisper so much.
I know back in the aughts, some of my dad's friends had cell phones that could do two-way radio. You could just click and do it, and you didn't have to call anyone.
Yeah.
Can phones still do that at all?
Most of the carriers don't do it anymore. I think Nextel was the one who did it the most, and Sprint had one. I don't know if anyone else did, and I think they've all ditched it.
Gotcha.
Nextel might still have it.
It's kind of neat.
Yeah. I mean, if you're in the same room, two-way radios are easy enough anyway. And most people have access to something like that for relatively cheap if they don't actually have it.
Could you do an app? I'm trying to think of things that work.
I mean, it would probably be simple enough to do an app that was just like push to talk.
Yeah. And just a local area chat.
Yeah.
Voice chat. It'd be kind of neat. But anyway, that's getting a little.
Yeah. Yeah. Far-fetched. But.
So
I liked the idea.
So that's the thing that I think is cool about it. Those are the things that combine to be interesting to me, is the team element and also the limited information.
Yeah.
Between, and I think it's interesting if you're on a team with somebody, but you don't know what that other person is doing, but it's important that you know what they're doing. So hopefully you coordinated before you stop knowing about them.
Yeah.
Another.
Ooh, I wonder if. This might be too much, but so you've got your speaking of one team, you've got one person probably on the planet, right? Mm-hmm. Handling production and infrastructure. And then you've got two or three players who are on the ship, piloting and delivering or engineering or whatever those three roles are.
Mm-hmm.
What if they lose contact with one another during travel? Because, you know, in I think they're moons in Time and Space, right? You go planet, moon, planet.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they're wormholes or whatever, well, you're in the wormhole. It might just be 30 seconds, or it might be a minute if you want to say it's for all transit time, but you lose contact. And so you're already on the way to a planet, but you know, the guy who's back, your team member who's back on your planet learns, oh, actually, it's going to be more lucrative for us to go to the blue planet instead of the green planet, but I can't reroute you until you come out of the wormhole. Mm-hmm. And so you have to time that kind of thing. It would be a little harder to do, I guess. They do radio silence in Space Alert.
Yeah.
So you might need a backing track doesn't work for this kind of thing. But I don't know. It was an idea. I don't know if it works or not.
It could be cool if you can find a way to accomplish it.
Yeah.
The other thing I was thinking is, what if the board, because time and space starts out with a board and all of the routes are determined.
Right. They're
already there. What if you did a dry erase board?
Oh, I like it.
And like, say your planet has by default, well, it's a dry erase board. You've got four spaces for hyperdrive hubs on it.
Sure.
And when you build one, you color it in and then you draw a line with your color marker pen.
Mm-hmm.
To wherever, whatever hub it's linking to, or okay. whatever planet's linking, or planet or sector, whatever the case is.
Yeah.
And then, so all of the linkages and all of the ways of moving among the planets are developed over the course of the game.
Okay. I like it.
And you would use timers to build them too, and all of that.
You could then potentially make one of the roles be something like cartographer, you know, the pilot or whoever has to plot the courses, so they're the only one who can actually create the ways to get there, and they have to be able to work like maybe paths can't cross except at wormholes or whatever or something like that. So the problem that we've created here is the thing we were worried about with Captain Sonar finding enough people to play, and Captain Sonar is one team against one team. I don't think this style of trading game really makes any sense at all with only two ships.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to either lower the number of players per thing, so it's just like one on the planet, one on the ship.
Yeah.
Or introduce some kind of NPC planets and ships that can be interacted with. Or both.
Yeah. I agree that you're not going to be able to have four players per ship. And more than two ships, if that. So it's definitely...
We could allow support for it if you somehow happen to have a game night with that many people, but...
But you're not.
It's not going to happen, ever.
No, it never happens. But it's neat. It's neat to think about.
Yep.
It's also a lot of components.
Yeah.
That we're laying out here. Timers, markers, dry erase boards, mats. Or not mats. Screens.
Mm-hmm.
Dog and pony shows. But it's
an
cool.
An actual hand grenade.
Yeah.
Just one.
And then at the end of the game, you're just scrambling to sell the most stuff and get the most points. I'd play it.
I like it in concept.
I think we should try to develop it.
Fine. Run a Kickstarter for $1 bazillion.
Then not deliver. And then just hide
just
from
retire to the mountains with our $1 bazillion.
That we got from Kickstarter.
Right. This sounds like a good plan.
Like a fine plan to me.
Well, if you would like to fund our campaign to retire to the mountains with your money and give you nothing in return, you should let us know on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You should let us know on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You should let us know on website at www.bu.mildlyalarming.com. And you should also let us know on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can also rate and review us with 5 stars. The number of stars is 2B5 and no fewer.
Or you could just...
I need to tell them where. iTunes, sorry. Stitcher, Google Play Music, or TuneIn Radio.
I jumped the gun, I'm sorry!
You could also jump on a gun.
Give me $15.
What is that? That's it?
Yeah, that's all.
Okay, cool. We'll see you next week on the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Goodbye.
$15.
Hey there, buddy. Clipping your fingernails?
Yeah. Just a little nail clipping thing going on here.
Well, you'll never have to clip your nails again with my patented machete chopped to the tip of the finger. Watch, I'll do it now.
No, wait.